And Indians President Rudy Ortega Jr. also thanked Biden for the expansion of the San Gabriel Mountains Monument, saying his people have long cared for the lands. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
This week's Point Puzzle has us thinking about a trip to the movies. For more, we go to Pearl Star from KPOV Bend with the Point Puzzle. This weekly feature challenges listeners with words and logic.
Last week, I asked you to start with a tech company. Drop the first and last letters and insert a T in the middle to get something many people bought last week. The answer is Amazon. Drop the first and last letter, insert the T, and you have Mots. Our winner this week is Lynn Straney, who listens to WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Da, da, yay, no, da, da, yay, no, da, da, yay, no, da, yay, no, da, yay, no, da, yay, no, da, da, yay, no.
For the new puzzle, take a five-letter word and repeat it twice. Insert a filler word in the first copy, and phonetically, you now have a two-word phrase for something you might find at the movies. So again, take a five-letter word and repeat it. Insert a filler word, like in the first copy, and phonetically, you now have a two-word phrase for something you might find at the movies. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
You're listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KPOV News for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Althea Billings, Eric Tegadoff, and Suzanne Potter. The producers, myself, Annette Newell, and our engineers, Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, so now's a great time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. Three questionable U.S. decisions relevant to the Gaza war, how Americans view the war in Israel, and U.S.-China military talks are back on track. First, the Biden administration has made three decisions in the last few weeks that do a disservice to American foreign policy and values. First, the U.S. stood alone in voting against a United Nations Security Council resolution to recognize Palestinian statehood, another gesture to Israel. The Palestinian request was supported by 12 Security Council representatives, with two, the United Kingdom and Switzerland, abstaining. Unanimity is required for the resolution to pass. It would then have gone to the General Assembly, where a two-thirds vote would approve full Palestinian representation. The U.S. argument for vetoing the resolution was that it, quote, strongly supports a two-state solution. It will only come from direct negotiations between the parties. Second, the administration decided to sanction one Israeli Defense Forces unit, composed of ultra-Orthodox soldiers, for its abuses in the West Bank. Israel called the move absurd, and in some ways it is. The U.S. is not sanctioning military aid to any IDF unit involved in human rights violations in the Gaza Strip, To the contrary, the latest tranche of U.S. military aid to Israel is unconditional. Secretary of State Blinken addressed the aid in a comment that is clearly untrue for both this and all preceding U.S. administrations. Quote, "As we're looking at human rights and the condition of human rights around the world, we apply the same standard to everyone. That doesn't change whether the country in question is an adversary or a competitor, a friend or an ally," unquote. He also said we can count on Israel to investigate its own violations, saying, quote, "This is what separates democracies from other countries, the ability, the willingness, the determination to look at themselves," he said. Evidently not in Gaza, as the State Department's own report has just indicated. Israeli authorities operating in Gaza had taken, quote, "no publicly visible steps to identify and punish officials implicated in alleged violations there." Those violations include the particularly horrific finding in Gaza of mass graves of Palestinians discovered following the departure of Israeli troops from the Al-Shifa and Nasser hospitals. The bodies show evidence of torture. The UN will be investigating. The violations also include the near total destruction of Gaza. The Guardian reports this comment by an expert on post-war reconstruction. Quote, "Based on the current amount of debris in Gaza with 100 trucks, we are talking about 14 years of work to remove it. That's just up till now. It gets worse every day there isn't a ceasefire," unquote. Third, the administration let stand removal of financial support of the UN Relief Agency for Palestine, known as the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, from the latest U.S. humanitarian aid bill for the Palestinians. The U.S. has been the major contributor to the UNRWA, as it's called. Israel contends that thousands of the agency's workers have ties to Hamas or other terrorist groups. But an independent review of the UNRWA, which provides aid and social services to about 5 million people throughout the Middle East, finds that, quote, "In the absence of a political solution between Israel and the Palestinians, UNRWA remains pivotal in providing life-saving humanitarian aid and essential social services, particularly in health and education, to Palestinian refugees in Gaza, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and the West Bank," unquote. UNRWA does need reforms, the report says, but it has, quote, "established and updated a significant number of policies, mechanisms, and procedures to uphold neutrality." The UN has suspended its investigation of Israel's charge. The investigation cleared 3 of the 12 UNRWA workers who were fired for lack of evidence. The others remain under investigation. By the way, some good news on humanitarian relief. World Central Kitchen has resumed serving meals in Gaza. How Americans view the war in Israel. Philip Bump of the Washington Post reports on the latest polls with these findings. First, half of respondents said they supported Israel's response to the Hamas attack 5 months ago. Now, fewer than 4 in 10 do. That support is heavily concentrated among Republicans. Second, about 2/3 of Americans say they support a ceasefire, at least somewhat, and just under half of them strongly support one. More than 3/4 of Democrats say they support a ceasefire at least somewhat. So does a majority of Republicans. Third, on military aid to Israel versus humanitarian aid to Palestinians, Democrats and independents want to decrease the former and increase the latter. Republicans want the reverse. And lastly, just before Iran attacked Israel, all groups strongly supported the U.S. in helping Israel defend itself. Needless to say, these polls do not reflect the ongoing campus protests. U.S.-China military talks are back on track. 4 meetings between the two countries' militaries have now taken place since the Biden-Xi summit last November. 2 of them occurred in April. One is the Military Maritime Consultative Agreement Working Group, which resumed in Honolulu after a 3-year hiatus. The subject was operational air and naval safety, avoidance of the kinds of near misses that are occurring with greater frequency. 180 incidents, according to U.S. sources, especially in the South China Sea area. Open, direct, and clear communications with the People's Liberation Army and with all other military forces in the region is of utmost importance to avoid accidents and miscommunication, said the head of the U.S. delegation. The second April meeting occurred on the 16th. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin spoke with China's new defense minister, Admiral Dong Jun, the first such conversation since November 2022. The working group talks have apparently had some effect. According to one U.S. military spokesman, quote, "We've observed a reduction in unsafe behavior between us and People's Liberation Army aircraft and vessels over the last several months. So we're encouraged by that." Though he also said dangerous and unlawful Chinese acts are occurring against the Philippines. In other news, also from China, Secretary Blinken was in Beijing. He spent 3 days there, meeting with President Xi Jinping and Foreign Minister Wang Yi, among others. Once again, the Chinese assessed the U.S.-China relationship as having stabilized, but also as having left China dissatisfied with certain U.S. policies, notably on high-tech export controls, regional security arrangements that target China and Taiwan. And once again, both Xi and Wang called upon the U.S. to be partners rather than rivals, jointly cooperate on international projects, and match words with deeds. Nevertheless, the two sides agreed to continue and expand consultations on these and other matters, including visa problems for Chinese visitors to the U.S., artificial intelligence, and drug control, particularly on fentanyl. Next, Germany's wobbly dance with Beijing. The German government has a China problem. How to sustain a very large commercial relationship while remaining true to so-called European values, starting with respect for human rights and adherence to the UN Charter. The one competes with and often undermines the other. When Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz took office in 2021, he vowed to move Germany away from economic dependence on China. Last year, Scholz described China as a, quote, partner, competitor, and systemic rival. But now, as the New York Times reports, quote, talk of scaling back reliance on China has been replaced with calls for equal access to China's market for foreign firms. This shift is apparent from Scholz's recently completed 3-day visit to China. He was accompanied by corporate leaders rather than foreign policy officials critical of China, demonstrating that Germany's economic interests are winning the competition over values and strategic priorities. China and Germany are major investors in each other's economy. Germany relies heavily on China as an export market, especially for high-end autos and electronics, and many German jobs depend on the China trade. German automakers worry about China's flooding of the electric vehicle market in Europe and about unfair competition in China, but that isn't keeping them from doing business with only passing reference to repression in China or to China's support of Russia in the Ukraine war. Banning nuclear weapons in space. A U.S.-Japan resolution put before the U.N. Security Council would ban nuclear weapons in space, strengthening the 1967 Outer Space Treaty that both the U.S. and Russia signed. But now Russia has vetoed that resolution, instead urging that all weapons be banned from space. The U.S. position, articulated by National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, is that Russia, quote, is developing a new satellite carrying a nuclear device. We have heard President Putin say publicly that Russia has no intention of deploying nuclear weapons in space. If that were the case, Russia would not have vetoed this resolution, unquote. In a separate statement, Sullivan underscored the specific dangers posed by a nuclear weapon in space, quote, placement by a state party of a nuclear weapon in orbit would not only violate the Outer Space Treaty, but would threaten the vital communications, scientific, meteorological, agricultural, commercial, and national security services that any and all satellites provide to societies around the globe, unquote. Yet Sullivan never did explain why the U.S. refused to endorse Russia's stance on banning all space-based weapons. Stopping the boats from reaching Britain. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak wants to be the one who, quote, stops the boats from bringing refugees from Rwanda. His government has appealed to several African nations to take these asylum seekers, but so far without success. So he's intent on sending the refugees back by commercial airlines and only needs Parliament's approval to do so. The move is clearly driven by politics. Sunak's Conservative Party is trailing Labour badly in polls, and stop the boats has become a key appeal. Never mind that in past years, when British governments tried to send people back to Rwanda, both British courts and the European Court of Human Rights ruled against them. To counter the critics, Sunak's administration drew up a Safety in Rwanda law that declares Rwanda safe for the refugees' return. But a UN agency has recently questioned that claim and warned airlines that they, quote, could be complicit in violating internationally protected human rights and court orders by facilitating removals to Rwanda. Since Britain is not a member of the European Union, it cannot follow the policy set by the right-wing Italian government of Giorgia Meloni, who, with the EU's support, has negotiated with autocratic North African countries, Egypt and Tunisia so far, to curb migration. The essence of the deal struck by the EU is development assistance in return for keeping people from migrating to Europe. Supposedly, a new EU-Africa partnership that the EU Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, says brings European and African interests together as never before. Finally, a few updates of previous stories. Score another win in Africa for Russia. Last week, I reported on Niger's decision to remove U.S. forces from its country, as Russian military advisors moved in. Now the government of Chad has also ordered 75 special operations forces to leave. This comes a year after the U.S. warned the Chad government about a Russian plot to kill him and three top aides. Evidently, the Chad government was unconvinced. And next, another UN deployment in Africa. Haiti's Prime Minister Ariel Henry has finally resigned, making new elections possible in a country besieged by gangs and on the brink of total chaos. The hope is that a new government with a new president, the previous one was assassinated in 2021, will agree to deployment of a UN peacekeeping force and be able to impose order. But that depends on the new government's gaining acceptance from gangs and paramilitary groups that control 80% of the capital, as well as key places such as the airport, fuel centers, and medical facilities. Those groups are responsible for many civilian casualties. Will they ever be prosecuted? On Monday, CNN carried an exclusive interview with one gang leader who acknowledges the kidnappings, rapes, and robberies his forces have committed, as well as his gang's assaults on the police. Hard to imagine he and his gang will ever be brought under control. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.
KABU News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KABU News In Depth. I'm Bertie. Recently, I interviewed Tony Fujiwara, the youth coordinator for Rose City Self-Defense. The program offers empowerment-based self-defense and personal safety workshops to people in the Portland area. City officials threatened to cut the budget for the program. I spoke with Tony to learn more about the program, its history, and the important role it plays in the community. So first off, I do want to thank you for not only being here today, but also for helping our community members feel safer.
I love what we do.
Great. Tell us about the Rose City Self-Defense Program.
So Rose City Self-Defense was started in 1979, and it was known as the Strengths Program. So a lot of folks are familiar with Women's Strength and the Girls' Strength and Boys' Strength. We were under the Portland Police Bureau up until 2022, in which our volunteers kind of made a decision that the population that we are trying to serve best, which are queer folks, women, Black and brown people, weren't feeling necessarily safe attending self-defense courses at a police station. And so they advocated and met with city council to have the program moved under the Community Safety Division. And with that, we decided that the naming was becoming gender exclusive. So we renamed ourselves Rose City Self-Defense, but it's the same programming that has been with the city of Portland since 1979. We listened to a lot of the feedback, and that was pretty much across the board the common.
That's awesome. I'm glad that you guys are aware of the people that you serve. So, Tony, what brought you to this type of public service work? Did you already have prior experience with teaching or learning self-defense?
I'm a former teacher, but zero experience in self-defense. As a high school public school teacher for 18 years, but I was also a girls rugby coach and boys rugby, focusing primarily on high school age. So I was teaching a lot of girl identifying folks how to connect with their body for the first time. Some of them, most of them had never played a sport before. So what I'm teaching them is body positivity and really seeing this development of believing in themselves through this really inclusive sport. And I thought, how do I teach folks the same lessons of all the beautiful things about your body and apply it to the whole group. And lo and behold, this position opened up last April, and that's how I ended up as an empowerment-based trauma-informed self-defense instructor.
That is incredible. I am so glad that you made it to where you are today. We definitely need more active do-gooders in the world. You know, as you mentioned, Portland's community members are so diverse, and we all have our different stories and experiences. What kind of people does the Rose City Self-Defense Program aim to serve?
So primarily, originally, we were created to help serve cis and trans women and non-binary folks who are comfortable in women-centered spaces. And then as the program grew, our target audience grew as well. And we really are specifically trying to hit those with disabilities, sex workers, the LGBTQI2S community, and those all of those who feel sort of underrepresented and underserved with the resources that have traditionally been accessible. And so recently, even, we have expanded a little bit more and included all genders in our personal safety and self-defense workshops.
Awesome. And I feel like it makes so much sense because the people that you mentioned, those groups, are the people that need to be able to defend themselves more than, you know, cisgendered people or able-bodied people in general, I could say.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned earlier, Rose City Self-Defense did experience a change in management from Portland Police Bureau to the new Community Safety Division back in July of 2022. And so I was wondering, how did this affect the self-defense program?
So luckily, the program itself didn't change much. We still offer this empowerment-based trauma-informed self-defense, but now we operate under the Safe Blocks program under the Office of Violence Prevention, which means we're really trying to focus a lot of our services to those areas in the city that have traditionally been underserved. So think about Outer East Portland, Coley neighborhood, North Portland. And so we provide these services for free all over, but we're going to make sure those areas have the first dibs at it before we start hitting less impacted areas. So we kind of look at socioeconomics, we look at social vulnerability, and then we also look at where is the violence happening the most, and that's where we're going to try to concentrate our services.
So Rose City Self-Defense emphasizes the idea of empowerment-based self-defense. So how might that play a role in the student's personal life experience?
So with empowerment-based self-defense, what we're doing is we're not just teaching the physical skills. We're going to teach all those tools that are innate with us, that we have within us, that can help keep us safe before we have to use those skills. So think about reconnecting with your intuition, but then we're also going to unpack how bias can affect that intuition, and so that we can start to learn to really start to trust our intuition and do the work to know that it's not bias that's causing our alarms to go off. Then we're going to teach folks how to be assertive and how to set boundaries using a really handy model. We're going to teach them how to de-escalate situations. We're going to give them escape options so that ultimately self-defense skills are going to be our last resort.
I think it makes complete sense to view self-defense as empowering. And I think it's important to remember that having the ability to react in those stressful fight or flight kind of situations requires a lot of confidence in yourself. And as you said, not just in terms of physical skill, but mental skill as well. And I think that de-escalation and making sure that you don't have to have the physical interaction go on is it's really smart.
No, and the thing too, what I really appreciate about these classes is we really draw on our students' experiences and try to tailor it to them too. So we're not here to give a silver bullet answer. We can't solve the problem of predators preying on folks, and you know that's always going to be a problem until we address the root causes there. But we can do is give you options and tools, bring them to the surface, give you a space to practice it so that they're at the forefront of your brain. And you know, for us, we're not asking people to be paranoid, we're asking people to be prepared. And that is really how we can give you the best feelings of safety, is that preparedness and those opportunities to practice.
So Rose City Self-Defense is just one of those programs that are supported by the Office of Violence Prevention. Can you tell us about some of the other programs they support, like Safe Blocks or Youth Against Violence?
Yeah. So the Office of Violence Prevention is pretty special. It was created many, many years ago, but it was really starting to see more focus on it as of recently when the City of Portland had their gun violence declaration. And so with that, we've been really focusing for the Office of Violence Prevention on gun violence in within gangs. And we're seeing, with a collaborative effort, we are seeing some change in that. So with that, they have Youth Against Violence, which is originally known as Boy Strength under the Strengths Program. And that targets youth in communities that have high violence. And these programs are meant to be pro-social. So they teach youth at a young age how to believe in themselves, how to interrupt violence when they see it, how to be allies, and really gives them explicit tools to stop the cycle of violence. So that's the Youth Against Violence program. It's kind of a brother program to the Rose City Self-Defense Youth Programming. And then the Safe Blocks program, they're out there doing crime prevention through environmental design. What they can go is assess properties and give you help on, hey, these bushes need trim, this lighting here, entryways, how to make sure that you can kind of design a space to be safer. They also do placemaking work where they're out in engaging communities, activating spaces in communities to help the community solve the problems together. And those all kind of form those pro-social, empowering people to take back their own safety, right? And not rely on other people to make them feel safe, but know that they have the potential and ability to create it if they just come together. And I think all of those programs work together to take the pressure off of traditional responses, so we're not relying on police or whatnot to fix the problems, but we as a community can come together and do that.
I love that. That is really incredible. And Portland as a community has dealt with a lot in terms of the Portland Police Bureau. And so I think that taking all of these issues that involve trauma and involve mental health skills, viewing them in a more trauma-informed way mm-hmm. is so helpful. And I think that's really going to help Portland, you know, progress as a city.
Absolutely. You know, trying to address the root causes to these problems instead of just putting band-aids on the end results.
Right, definitely. Sometimes you need surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So how can those other programs benefit Portland's community members in the long run?
Well, these are some of those value-added services, meaning these are provided for free. Your tax dollars have already paid for this. So community members can request personal safety workshops, de-escalation training, youth workshops that are all centered around safety and self-defense and empowerment and leading with empathy, teaching people to give that empathy first before we start to go into different strategies so that we can see it before it happens. Maybe we can interrupt it and potentially divert our traditional responses and start to kind of see that there are other ways that we can start to attack these problems, and that if we can build confidence in youth so that they're not attracted to the violence because they have their value, they know their self-worth, they love themselves, then maybe we can start to interrupt those long-term effects.
Definitely. You know, you only know what you've been taught, right? So that being said, I hear the city of Portland wants to cut the budget for the Rose City Self-Defense Program and Youth Against Violence Program next year. So how would that impact the programs and the youth in our community?
So, yeah, because we fall under the Community Safety Division, which is the public safety service area, we are in the same budget pool as Portland Fire, Portland Police, and numerous other emergency response sort of traditional organizations. A lot of those budgets are what we would consider untouchable. So when looking for where they could make cuts, it was decided that Rose City Self-Defense and Youth Against Violence would be the cuts. And so the way that would impact it is those programs would ultimately disappear. It's not the jobs of the folks who run those, it's the actual programs themselves. Rose City Self-Defense provides services for domestic violence, and that's the only provider in the city of Portland. There's nobody else that the city of Portland has. You know, we're specifically supporting women, queer communities, and it feels very counterproductive to the end mission of the city, which is to create a safe city and to have folks feel safe in their city. And so we are here on the ground providing these trainings that people walk away from. We have surveys and results and the data that show that we have an increased feelings of safety up to 70 to 80% increase from the time they walked into our class to the time they left. Another thing folks are recognizing is because we teach about healthy relationships and what intimate partner violence could look like, is folks are walking in not realizing that they have been victims of domestic violence and intimate partner violence, and they are leaving with this realization that they have been and that perhaps it's time to get out of it. And so that kind of training, you don't get that anywhere else, let alone for free. And the city of Portland has been one of the few cities in the nation to provide these services for no cost to all the participants.
Yeah, that's incredibly heartbreaking to know that all of these people who really need help are not going to be able to receive it. And as you said, yes, I totally agree that it is counterproductive to cut these programs because they're these programs are prevention, right, for all of these issues that, you know, Portland Police Bureau or, you know, even the ambulance might serve.
Through our volunteer program, so there's only two paid employees through Rose City Self-Defense.
Oh, wow.
But it's nearly all volunteer driven. So we have about 40 volunteers who end up running most of the classes. And so again, for just two full-time employees, you're getting thousands of hours of trainings provided to thousands of people within the city of Portland.
What kind of support do Rose City Self-Defense and the Youth Against Violence program need from the community?
So if folks have an opinion and feel strongly that these programs, in either way, should exist or not, we ask that you go to your commissioners directly and let them know how you feel. Let them know the value of these programs and taking away programs that support Black and Brown communities, women of color, disabled folks, the LGBTQ community. There's very few services for them as is, let alone free, where people walk away with real tangible skills to help interrupt the cycle of violence and empower themselves to feel safe in the space that they take up. And so if that is something that you feel strongly about in either way, voice that opinion to your commissioners, because they are the ones who ultimately will be making the vote. So that's Commissioner Gonzalez, Commissioner Rubio, Commissioner Ryan, Commissioner Mapps, or Mayor Wheeler.
Thank you so much for being with us, Tony.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
That was Tony Fujiwara, the youth coordinator for Rose City Self-Defense. We talked about the resources the program has to offer to Portland's most vulnerable and historically underserved community members. Portland City Government has plans to stop funding the program due to budget cuts. More information on Rose City Self-Defense can be found online at rosecityselfdefense.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Birdie.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our spring membership drive. It's taking place now through May 25th.